First Coast Connect with Melissa Ross is sponsored in part by Baptist Health.
City Councilman Matt Carlucci withdraws from the Jack's Mayor's race. Early voting continues for a special election to fill the late Tommy Hazzuri's seat. And what the Omicron variant could mean for Northeast Florida, some of the stories making headlines this week. Good Friday morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, all of the top stories of the week with our Friday roundtable. Listen on the radio, or you can watch the live stream right now. Join us on Facebook, YouTube, and later on demand at PBS Jack's Passport. All the news ahead, then later, a look inside our JME Jacksonville Music Experience. And we'll keep the music going as entertainer Miles J spins some holiday tunes for you. But first, it's Friday, and here to discuss a very busy week in the news, as it always is, we welcome regular contributor Charles Griggs. Hey, Charles.
Good morning, Melissa.
Good to see you. Catherine Lewin of the Florida Times Union is with us. Hi, Catherine.
Good morning.
Good morning. Ben Becker of Action News Jax. Hey, Ben.
Good morning, Melissa.
And rounding out our fabulous foursome, A.G. Gankarski of Florida Politics and also our own vertical, Jacksonville Today. Hey, A.G.
Hey, Melissa. Good morning.
It's great to have all four of you with us. Lots to get into. We'll go to your calls in a moment, everybody. Join the conversation right now. The number 549-2937. Let's begin with the top story last night. Jacksonville City Councilman Matt Carlucci put out a statement saying he's withdrawing from the city's mayor's race. That election won't be held until 2023, mind you. Carlucci, a well-known, well-liked moderate Republican, has run for mayor before. He had struggled to fundraise in recent months. Now, still in the race are Democrat Donna Deegan, a former local TV anchor and a breast cancer research advocate, and Republican City Councilman Al Ferraro. Also running, non-party-affiliated candidates Omega Allen and Darcy Richardson. And the other big names rumored to run are Daniel Davis, president of the Jacks Chamber, and City Councilmember Leanna Cumber. Davis and Cumber are both Republicans and have already raised considerable campaign war chests. So we begin the hour with a closer look. Let us know your thoughts about this news in the city's mayor's race. 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. A.G. Gankarski, let's begin with you. You've been writing about this at Jax Today. On the Republican side, it's a crowded field. The two big dogs on the fundraising aspect of this are Daniel Davis and Leanna Cumber. Matt Carlucci's fundraising stalled, and that may have factored into his decision.
Yeah. He really, you know, when he started in January, he had a really strong launch. His campaign account and his political committee had 400,000 in there. But it tailed off after that. And he had a staff dismissal a few months back. He got rid of somebody in the city council office, his executive council assistant. And from then, his political consultants left the campaign, and his fundraising really went down from there. He had questions about viability, he's putting his own money into the campaign and so on. But the question was, how long can he continue? And It turned out just until December, you know, because he got out this time. He's leaving, avoiding the race for the moderate Republican voter. But I wonder how many moderate Republican voters there really were. He's going to run for council again, so there's that. But, you know, for Carlucci, he wanted to be mayor for years and years, decades. This is a big blow to his ego.
Sure. Ben Becker, Action News Jax, the voters that might have supported Matt Carlucci in the first election, where do they go? Conventional wisdom holds this could be helpful to the lone Democrat formally declared so far, Donna Deegan.
Well, first off, Melissa, I had Matt by the station on Wednesday to do an interview about Leanna Cumber's proposal to repeal the gas tax that goes into effect January 1st. Mm-hmm. He made no mention of it. And then 24 hours later, it comes out. So I must be slowing down.
I don't think you are. But yeah, he kept that close till he announced it. Yeah. So how do you see this shaking up the field? Go ahead, Ben. We actually lost Ben. We'll try to get him back. Let's move along to Charles Griggs. Charles, what's your assessment now of the field with this news?
Yeah, I think, like AG mentioned, the numbers were tough for Councilman Carlucci to kind of regroup from, understanding that the dynamics of the race have changed now. Someone like Donna Deegan coming in, who's a useful Democrat, who a lot of moderate, conservative Democrats would kind of, you know, see Carlucci as an alternative. Now that Carlucci is out, that certainly opens the door more for someone like Donna Deegan or another moderate Republican to get in the race. However, the money is the challenge out here now. You know, the money is different. It's different in Jacksonville. There are only a small few of people who give a large amounts of money, and those people are certainly tapping into the names that you've already called. And right now, the one thing that candidates have going for themselves, it is still early, still very early. We have a year and a half out. So the dynamics of our political landscape could change between now and spring of 2023. But right now, someone like Carlucci probably is better served to continue to march the way he's been marching as a leader on city council. He's had the opportunity to chair the finance committee. You know, he's been council president before. So all of these things have really sort of give him more strength in the future on the council, depending on how the political landscape shapes out. But as far as his run for mayor, the numbers just weren't there for him.
We have Ben Becker back now from Action News, Jax. Ben, you know, it's just incredible how much money it takes to win citywide, the city's top post. Mind you, as we've all pointed out, the election isn't until 2023, but some players who haven't even formally announced yet, like Daniel Davis, who's the head of the Jack's Chamber, he's been fundraising for years. It takes an incredible amount of money to win now across this big city county. This is set to be the most expensive mayor's race in Jacksonville history, Ben.
First off, Melissa, flip phones just don't work as well as they used to.
Yeah, that's right. That's all right. We'll make it happen.
Yeah, I have to upgrade. So you need a lot of money, right? And that's what it takes. And, you know, Cumber's already got a bunch. She was up fundraising in D.C. the other day. Davis hasn't even declared yet. So you got these two heavyweights out there that raised, you know, they're in seven figures, and you don't know how high it's going to go. But this isn't just a local level. I mean, you look around state level, national levels, and you need money. And, you know, it's all about the Benjamins. You know, if you don't have the dough, you know, you can't go. And right now, that's what the political system is all about. So a guy like Carlucci, who started fast, you know, it slowed down. It was discussed before, he is a moderate. And for this Jacksonville race, it's going to take sharp elbows. And maybe 20 years ago would have worked out more for Carlucci. But even if he would have went all the way through on this one, I'm curious to see how it would have ended up. And as we've mentioned, the moderate Republican out there, just like a moderate Democrat, I'm not sure they exist as much anymore.
Catherine Liu in Florida Times Union, with this news, it's more likely that a conservative Republican will face off against, it's likely, Donna Deegan, the Democrat in the race, in the runoff election. This will be fascinating to watch, given that the demographics and the political makeup of Duval County has changed a lot in recent years. But it will be a turnout race. Which side will be more motivated to turn their voters out?
Yeah, no, Duval has changed so much in the last 10 years demographically. There's a lot more diversity. There's a lot more Latin and Hispanic people here. It'll be interesting to see what happens, even though Duval is certainly, in Northeast Florida in general, is certainly a conservative area. With Matt Carlucci out, we'll just have to see with Donna against, some conservatives who have already raised a lot of money.
Yeah, A.G. Gankarski, you tracked the money closely. And let's be clear, it's a fact of life that politicians have to raise enormous sums to run even for these local offices, which, you know, we talk about that like it's a normal, acceptable thing. It's really not. It shouldn't be that way, but it is. You'll be writing about this at jackstoday.org Monday. And AG, whoever becomes the city's next mayor is going to have an incredibly challenging agenda to deal with. We can talk about the horse race aspect of this contest, but let's talk about the issues that will be affecting the city's next mayor.
Yeah, I mean, there are a bunch. I mean, the demographic evolution of the city is a massive thing that needs to be addressed. I mean, we still function the city like it's 20, 30 years ago in many key ways. And I'm curious to see how the diversity gets incorporated. But beyond that, you got issues like, you know, climate change and, you know, the fact that you've got the river rising. You've got, you know, issues regarding economic stratification. You've got issues regarding the broken promises of consolidation. There's a lot of money programmed to fixing sewage and infrastructural issues that weren't resolved in, you know, older parts of the town, you know, since consolidation. So you got a lot of these things that are in play. But, you know, ultimately what we're seeing here in terms of this election coming up is it's the last stand for Republicanism in Northeast Florida. I mean, Democrats have an electoral advantage here, yet Republicans control the office. That's a discussion we have time and time again on this program. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're seeing a lot of that in play with this race also. And I think you're going to get through the politics of the race, and then whoever becomes mayor, Republican, Democrat, or potentially otherwise, will deal with the same, like, portfolio of issues.
If you're just tuning in, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. Let us know your thoughts on the city's mayor's race, still over a year away, but Matt Carlucci has dropped out, narrowing the field, 549-2937. Peter on the south side. Hi, Peter. Good morning.
Yes, hi. Good morning. My comment is not just money. You need money if you don't have name recognition. So you have someone like Donna Deegan, who has excellent name recognition, absolutely no political experience, no knowledge of how to run a city, but yet she is a very viable candidate because everyone knows who she is. Now, you know, running a city does take some expertise. There are a fair number of office holders that are appointed by the mayor. So it seems to me that we need someone that knows what they're doing and not just a nice person. That's my comment.
I appreciate your thoughts, Peter. You know, Charles Griggs, we have heard that brought up about the Deegan campaign. Donna Deegan has pushed back on that more than once, including on this show when she announced, saying she has run and continues to run a national nonprofit. She does have an understanding of the issues affecting this city. She has run for office before, and she claims, not without evidence, that this kind of litmus test of executive experience wouldn't necessarily be applied to a male candidate, because certainly there are male candidates who have run for office and won, including the former president of the United States, who didn't have any hold any political office before. Here's Deegan.
I'm running for mayor really for many of the same reasons that I ran for Congress, because I love Jacksonville and I think we can do better.
Okay, Charles Griggs, what about this? How do you see this being a campaign issue?
Well, you know, Donna Deegan has the same amount of elected experience as our last two mayors, right? So it shouldn't be a factor if she messages it right.
Yeah, I mean, Lenny Curry, said to Lenny Curry, you don't have enough experience to be the mayor.
That's right, and Alvin Brown as well. So, you know, I think the big picture here, though, as we get closer to this, I don't think there's any way in the world that the Republican Party lets Donna Deegan run in this race as a lone Democrat, you know, certainly as a lone viable Democrat. I think what you're going to probably see later on is someone,
a Democrat
with some name recognition.
Yeah.
Yes, who's backed by the Republican Party to get in to take some votes from around the edges. But I think that the you know, all political campaigns sort of anticipate these types of, lack of experience, landmines and deal with them sort of on a messaging standpoint. And most candidates have enough to stand on in terms of what their professional background is in order to get them through that process. So I don't really see that being an issue going forward. And candidates always, when elected, surround themselves with people who are pretty much experts at running that particular municipality or the elected office.
Eugene on the north side. Go ahead, Eugene.
Good morning. Mr. Griggs stole some of my thunder.
Yeah, he's good at that. He knows his stuff. Go ahead, Gene.
I have a concern with the Democratic chair and party because it allows all of these folks to get on the ballot, and they don't stand a snowball chance of winning. And what it does is it pull from a person or persons that should be the primary people. And I don't know what their motives are, but I think it need to be some halt to that, because if you can't win, don't get in the race and pull from the other folks. And the Democrats has done that time and time again when it comes down to the mayor's race. I'll take my comments off the air.
Thanks, Gene. Catherine Lewin, you know, this is a time-honored tactic to get the result you want. Putting a spoiler candidate in the race, often funded by dark money. Just the other day, an investigative report came out in, I believe, the Orlando Sentinel, showing how Florida Power and Light was funneling dark money to shadow candidates so that they could control the political process around the regulation of investor-owned utilities. There, corruption in this state is a huge problem, and this is one example.
Yeah, no, having a dark money candidate and then questioning the experience and ability of a more progressive and female candidate, you know, is familiar, I guess, tactics.
Mm-hmm. A.G. Gankarski, you know, closing these kinds of loopholes, it's been done in some other states, but certainly not here in Florida, where you are allowed to kind of undertake these kinds of shenanigans to monkey around with an election.
Yeah, I mean, you can do all kinds of ways of monkeying around with the elections, you call it. I mean, there's third-party political committees, a lot of untraceable money. I spend a lot of my working day trying to trace that political committee money, and it can get frustrating because sometimes it just gets moved from one committee to the other, sort of like the old four corners offense in college basketball. It's just a stalling tactic. But, I wanted to address the previous caller's point regarding multiple Democratic candidates and the supposed need to coalesce behind Donna Deegan. I don't see that happening. And I'll tell you why. After this legislative session, you've got Senator Audrey Gibson. She's going to be looking for something to do. Could she run for mayor? Somebody's going to lose that Senate primary between Tracy Davis and Reggie Gaffney. Could that person run for mayor? You're going to have people with political experience who aren't just going to coronate Donna Deegan. And that's the beauty of the first election in the city. You can have multiple Republicans, multiple Democrats. God sorts it all out at the end, and then you get, sort of polarized, general election in May. But, it's sort of a battle royal right now, and I don't think Deegan's shown anything that's really scaring people off.
Gail on the west side. Go ahead, Gail.
Good morning. Everyone on the panel seemed to agree and know that it costs a lot to campaign. Would you share with the public why it costs a lot?
Yeah. Ben Becker, let's talk about what it takes to win an office like this, beginning with TV ads, and they're going to air on your station, Ben, along with all the other ones in town, and they cost a lot of money.
Well, you can get a 10% discount if you have a coupon. So.
That's good to know.
Look that up at actionnewsjacks.com. it costs money to run, and you'll notice during the election season, almost every single advertisement that we show and the other stations show is political. And that costs money. And we have the capability to attract the most eyeballs in town, and that's how it works. So how do you get your message out? You buy ads on the local TV stations and you put them out there and they run nonstop one after another after another. Sometimes you have commercial breaks where the same candidate may buy two or three spots in that one break. So you can't get away from it. Sometimes you won't even strategically place them where it's the first ad that runs right when you go into break, or it's the final ad that runs right before you come back. So there's a whole strategy involved in that, and that takes a lot of money. So if you don't have the cash, it's just not going to work for you. And that's why that's where it all starts with. Who's raised the most amount of money? May not be the best candidate, but if you have the most money, you have the best chance.
That is the unfortunate reality. Lots of tweets. Here's one from Dan. Carlucci's decision is an indication how tough it will be for any moderate Republican to succeed here in Jacksonville or in Florida. This does not bode well. Susie tweets the show, OMG, talk about a mansplaining caller. She's a nice person, but first of all, if you think the mayor runs the city and not the staff people who are doing the heavy lifting, you don't have a clue. Deegan is a leader. So that is a Deegan fan tweeting the show. And it's 549-2937. Mike on Facebook says, what month will the mayor's election be held? Shouldn't it be in November? Catherine Lewin, Florida Times Union, this election will be in spring of 2023. For years, people have argued that the city elections should go along with the November calendar to drive increasing turnout, that having these elections at odd times makes it difficult for the full voice of the people to be heard. These tend to be lower turnout elections, which isn't really ideal, to say the least.
Yeah, I've heard talk about how Duval does elections. I wrote a story just a couple of weeks ago with activists who were concerned about how Mike Hogan was closing down certain early voting sites for this special election. When it comes to voting, it tends to be higher turnout when you have elections that match up with what's happening nationally, and just make it as easy as possible for people to know where and when to vote. And that typically increases turnout.
Let's take one more call on the mayor's race, then we'll move on. It's Ted at the Beaches. Hey, Ted, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm here. I just want to say the Carlucci name is a well-respected name here in Jacksonville, Florida. And yeah, you got to have a lot of money to get in the race and bump elbows. But I just want to thank the Carlucci family for all they've done here in Jacksonville. And I'll take my comment off there.
Thanks, Ted. You know, Councilman Carlucci has said that he will continue to work for the city with the priorities of Riverfront Park development, remediation of failing septic tanks, improving infrastructure, bolstering ethics regulation, focusing on climate and resiliency issues as an at-large councilman. So I'm sure he appreciates that comment. If you're just tuning in, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. We're going to move ahead now. Keep calling in, though, 549-2937. Now, speaking of elections, early voting ends Sunday in the special election to replace the late city councilman Tommy Hazzouri. The actual election day is set for Tuesday. Less than 5% of voters across Duval County had cast a ballot halfway through the early voting period. So far, Democrats hold the early voting lead, about 51% D as opposed to 36% Republican, and then some other non-party affiliated votes. Charles Griggs, there's four candidates in this at-large race. This will also likely go to a runoff. The Democrats are ahead now, but that could change if a lot of Republicans come out on election day itself, which, again, it's Tuesday.
Yeah, it's tough as well, because this is a special election in an off-election year time, which makes it, like double trouble, right, to get people excited about one election, one seat. And I think the worry is on both sides, really Democrats and Republicans, is that voter turnout will be so low until we won't get a good representation of what the public wants to see. This is tough because of the timing, and the rules say that this election has to occur at this time. And we're likely to get a runoff if someone doesn't get that 50% plus one. But the turnout so far isn't, you know, doesn't look very good. I know people are trying to be excited about it. It's the holiday season, and it makes it very difficult to get people out to vote, especially during the early part of the holiday shopping season.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, I would let me use this platform once again to tell everyone listening who's a Duval County resident, if you complain about city government, go out and vote in this election. Use your franchise to have a say in how the city council is going to be operating on issues that affect you. Go to DuvalElections.com, find your precinct, your early voting site, look at the candidates, go cast a ballot, or go on election day itself, Tuesday. There are four candidates, Ben Becker, two Republicans, two Democrats. The leading candidates, I think it's fair to say, are Democrat Tracy Polson and Republican Nick Howland. Although, of course, anything can happen in an election. But, you know, they've both been out there hustling, trying to get turnout up at least a little bit. This is an at-large seat. They will be replacing the late Tommy Hazzuri, who left a large political legacy to fill.
You know, this raises the question of the viability of an at-large seat to begin with.
Yeah.
You know, Garrett Dennis has introduced legislation before about, you know, should we do away with the at-large seat? And I believe there's five of them in Duval County. We have 19 members of city council, so that would bring it down to 14. And some had said in the past, have said that maybe council's too big, and that's one of the reasons that Jacksonville has trouble growing and making decisions because there's too many cooks in the kitchen. So that's, you know, that's one thing that I don't know if that's ever going to change. I don't know if people want to give up their seats. It would reduce the size of government. Some would agree that's a good thing. But it does raise an interesting point that do we need to kind of get out of our own way and reduce the size of city council?
Yeah, AG, this has come up before. Do we really need 19 council members? That said, we still do encourage people to vote as long as this is the system we have.
One of Councilman Garrett Dennis's contentions is we don't need these five at-large mini-mayor type positions, but Dennis hasn't been able to get traction for that concept yet. I mean, politicians want new offices to run for, so that's five right there. But yeah, I mean, there are questions about how meaningful an at-large seat is that are raised by this particular election. You've got turnout that's now 5.26% according to Duval County Supervisor of Elections. And you really have two candidates with any momentum. You know, Nick Howland, the Republican, he's on TV all the time. Tracy Polson's got a bunch of signs around. And the other two, I don't know what they're doing. So this probably will go to a runoff. And, you know, that runoff, ironically, is going to have almost 3 months for these candidates to tell their story. So you have this initial winnowing. Then you have a longer campaign. But, yeah, we're looking at 10, 12%, you know, maybe 15% turnout tops for the first election, which, you know, is on par with non-competitive or non-meaningful elections in our city's past. It really doesn't dignify the legacy of Tommy Hazzuri much. I mean, I think he would, if he were looking down, he'd be kind of surprised by the low turnout and low voter enthusiasm.
Charles Griggs, it is remarkable that these candidates have to get people to come out not just for one special election, but two. That's a tough haul, as Ben, I think, said, at the holidays and just beyond.
Yeah, it's tough because it's already tough for our candidates in the general election. And we're going to see here in just a short period of time, about a year and a half from now, how tough it's going to be to get people to come out for the big gaggle called the mayor's race, right? And that is going to be a low turnout one as well. But traditionally, it has been low turnout, which is why we've had conversations about whether or not we should move the elections to a more popular date, popular time in the year for people who are accustomed to voting in a certain time of year. But at least this time, there will be perhaps if there is a runoff, we'll have some time to get, you know, sort of reboot. And hopefully there'll be some issues on the table, because right now the council's getting ready to go to holiday break. There'll be maybe some issues on the table that will help define the two remaining candidates for the public to make a decision upon.
Yeah, as AG mentioned, the turnout has now surpassed 5.2%. Woohoo! Catherine Lewin, I'm looking at the Duval Elections website. There are more than 645,000 active eligible voters in this county. So far, only about 33,000, almost 34,000 ballots have been cast. Pretty depressing.
Yeah, that's not a lot.
Yeah.
And when I spoke to the election supervisor, Mike Hogan, before, he like it's been said before, he did only expect 10 to 15% turnout. But yeah, that's not a good start, even with the low expectation anyway.
It's 549-2937. Let's take one more call on this story, and then we're going to talk some other news and notes from the week. Bill is on the line in Fairfield. Bill, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Melissa.
Go ahead.
You mentioned earlier, as I was coming over the Matthews Bridge, I heard you say that it's unfortunate that money runs the election.
Mm-hmm.
I was listening to the fellow talk about the advertising buys. No, what's really unfortunate is our leadership, our government, at all levels, doesn't do everything they can to inform the public as to what we're about, what the politicians are doing and what the whole situation is. We're left, a lot of people are below water. They're struggling just to put food on the table. They don't have time to investigate all of that. I think it should be in reverse. I think it should be the major effort of our government is to let inform their public what goes on, how it works, and who stands by what issues and who doesn't. And that's the biggest thing. And also, you can do financial transactions on your telephone, triple encrypted, with facial recognition or thumbprint. Why in the world can't we vote from our phone?
I'm with you on that, Bill. We need election reform in the way we cast ballots, like we needed it yesterday. So I couldn't agree with you more on that. There's so many changes we could make. That would be just one. So, Bill, I appreciate that comment. And when it comes to keeping people informed on what our elected leaders are doing, that's what we do on this show every day, just about. Speaking of which, Ben Becker of Action News Jax, I want to ask you about something you tweeted out this week. It was a retweet, actually. Jacksonville Mayor Lenny Curry is typically expected to come out to the city's tree lighting ceremony downtown. He skipped that Wednesday night, and he sent the city council president, I believe, in his place. Instead, the mayor went down to South Florida to a fundraiser at Mar-a-Lago, home of former President Donald Trump. Now, the event was a fundraiser for football great Herschel Walker, who is a candidate for U.S. Senate in Georgia. This raised some eyebrows that the mayor was once again inserting himself into this Senate campaign in Georgia rather than attending to city business here. Your thoughts?
Well, you know, that's a decision the mayor made. That's his prerogative. Certainly one could ask the mayor's office why they made that decision, but that's not within the scope of a public records request. So my experience, since it's not within the scope of that, I would not believe I'd get a response on that from the mayor's office.
Charles Griggs, you know, Lenny Curry may very well have political aspirations beyond being mayor of Jacksonville, and this kind of activity could be part of that.
Yeah, sure. I mean, there's, we've seen this before. You know, candidates, I'm not just saying candidates, but elected officials, they make sure that they, you know, pretty much show up their support across the political landscape. That happens on, you know, across the spectrum. Not surprising at all. But I would venture to say that people here who are part of the Christmas tree lighting were having more fun.
AG, AG Gankarski, Herschel Walker's candidacy in Georgia has raised eyebrows of its own. Now he's faced allegations of domestic violence, among other accusations of outlandish behavior. He's a guy running on name recognition up there in Georgia as well. People have raised questions about whether he's qualified to be in the U.S. Senate. What are your thoughts about the mayor allying himself with this campaign?
Well, I mean, Herschel Walker's the only guy that's getting momentum in that field if you look at every poll. So Even people who aren't endorsing him, like Rick Scott, say, well, he looks like the guy right now. So I think Republicans are kind of holding their nose regarding his issues. But Curry's been on board with Herschel Walker for a while. I mean, they, you know, he was on the host committee for the fundraiser before Halloween here for Herschel Walker's campaign that I reported on. And, you know, it's kind of on brand for the mayor, you know, former athlete, et cetera. And that Mar-a-Lago fundraiser for Walker was very interesting. Nature Boy Ric Flair, the professional wrestler, was on hand. Also on hand was Susie Wiles, who is part of Donald Trump's political operation, of course. And
former top staffer to former Mayor John Payton. Yeah.
Right. And Susie Wiles and Ron DeSantis are on the outs. I mean, DeSantis basically kicked Wiles to the curb after Wiles won him the 2018 gubernatorial election against Andrew Gillum. So I'm curious to see how Curry finesses that. You know, Susie Wiles, Ron DeSantis dynamic. I'm curious to see if Ron DeSantis gets involved at all in this Georgia Senate race.
Let's take one more call and then we'll move on to some other stories. Margaret in Avondale. Margaret, go ahead.
Yes, you were discussing campaign finance and how expensive it is to run for office, but it doesn't have to take a lot of money. It takes some imagination. The people who are making money off of campaigns have designed things so that they will make money, and that means advisors, advertisers, television stations, et cetera. I recall when Jimmy Carter was running for president, he visited the Orlando area, and my sister and I, who were sitting on a park bench, he came up to us, and he said, "Hi, I'm Jimmy Carter. I'm running for president," and he handed us a little pamphlet, about 3 by 5 inches, printed cheap little pamphlet that had outlined his campaign promises.
Mm-hmm.
And my sister said, after he left, she said, "I'm going to vote for him because he came up and asked me to." So I think maybe the personal touch and a little imagination and getting out and doing a little footwork would do a lot of wonders. He got a lot of publicity, free publicity, for doing that. So
that's an interesting memory, Margaret. Thanks for sharing that.
Sure.
Yeah, more innocent times, certainly, back then. That's a great story. Okay, speaking of the presidency, Joe Biden is coming out with new measures to confront the pandemic as the worrisome Omicron variant makes its way into North America. No reported cases in Florida yet. Here's Joe Biden, the president.
"This variant is a cause for concern, not a cause for panic. We have the best vaccine in the world, the best medicines, the best scientists, and we're learning more every single day. And we'll fight this variant with scientific and knowledgeable actions and speed, not chaos and confusion."
Okay, Catherine Lewin, President Biden says he's going to impose new testing rules on international travelers, provide more free test kits, look at alternatives to quarantining in schools. Certainly, all of these efforts will get pushback here in Florida from the governor, Catherine.
Yes, I would imagine it would get a fair amount of pushback. Florida has been open from almost the beginning. And especially when President Biden is going to have a one-day testing, negative testing requirement for people coming internationally, I'd imagine that would certainly cut down on people coming into the states potentially. But hopefully everything he's doing will also help slow the spread of another variant. But yeah, I'd imagine there's going to be some pushback from Governor DeSantis and many, many other people here in the state.
Yeah. Charles Griggs, the new variant may be more transmissible and less susceptible to existing vaccines. We don't know that yet, though. It's been identified in nearly 24 countries. Doctors and epidemiologists in this state believe, Charles, that it probably is already here.
Yeah, it's probably. By the time it's located, it's definitely probably already here. The challenges and the way that the science works and epidemiology works is to get in front of it with public, you know, public health measures to make sure it's mitigated at the, you know, from the entry point, wherever those are, and to do as much as you can to slow the spread. You're not going to stop the spread. You're going to slow the spread and make sure that people who are at the highest risk are not severely impacted, which means that we need to continue to do the things that we've been living with for the last almost 2 years now. So we're going to be living with COVID for a while, and we might as well get used to it. But we can, like the president said, you know, it's not something we should be afraid of, but concerned about. And we need to just keep doing the things that we're doing and make sure people get vaccinated and practice good hygiene.
Yeah, everyone over the age of 18 is now advised to go get a booster shot if you've already been vaccinated 6 months or more ago. Ben Becker, what about at the same time, the CEO of Moderna, they've put out likely the most effective vaccine against COVID. The other day, he said we might need a whole new vaccine for this variant.
Well, anything's possible at this point, right? I mean, anything's on the table. You never know. You know, what's true today isn't necessarily true tomorrow. So, you know, as variants change, then the fight against them also changes. And now some would say, well, it's in his interest to want to have new vaccines too, right? So you have
Of course. And he's saying as early as like January of next year, they'd be out with this new product, right?
Right. So you have a segment of the population that you're never going to convince, and they're going to find a hole in any argument to be able to get vaccinated. So to Charles's point, you know, this is something we have to live with. It's not going away anytime soon. We just have to make the best choices that we can make in the meantime. And this, I think, frankly, you ask the average person, they're just going to live their life. And they're not even losing sleep over this new variant or any variants that come down the pike.
A.G. Gankarski, Florida is doing better than most other Southeast states in terms of our vaccination rates. So that is a little bit of good news to report. We could be doing better, but we're not the worst, at least.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and of course, that comes with caveats like vaccine tourism, people who came in from elsewhere to get the shot early in the pandemic. And you have stratifications among demographic lines. Our rural areas, for example, our poorer areas in general, do not have the vaccination rates that you see in more affluent areas. So you have all of those issues in play. We've seen political posturing on this issue from state government, from local government, particularly since President Biden came into office. Pugnacious press conferences from Governor DeSantis, lawsuits from Attorney General Ashley Moody, attaboys from Mayor Curry, and this sort of thing. And, you know, so we've seen this really politicized pandemic where, you know, it's clear the governor's political future is predicated on being the avatar of a certain type of pandemic response. We all know that. That's a subtext of the last year of that man's life. And, you know, so, you know, my advice to people were I to give it would be, you know, wear your mask when needed, be careful, take your zinc and vitamin C, but don't look to this government to do much but posture on this issue. Definitely get your booster shot, but if you're waiting for Ron DeSantis to tell you to do so in a PSA, you're going to be waiting a long time.
That's certainly true. Before we wrap it up, I want to spotlight a story Catherine Lewin reported in the Times Union. Now, affordable housing, particularly at the holidays, is a matter of concern in this pandemic. Jacksonville Area Legal Aid got a $2.4 million grant from the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development to help low-income tenants at risk of eviction. Getting a decent apartment at a decent rent is so tough in this city and in every city. Catherine, you have a piece about tenants at a complex on Jacksonville's east side paying nearly $1,000 a month to live in squalor.
Yes. Yep. I spent 5 or 6 months looking into downtown east apartments on the east side. It's formerly known as Franklin Arms. That's how most people know it. And the building has been plagued with code violations and crime and other problems for many, many, many years, as far back as the 90s. But when I was speaking to tenants there, there was a few people who had actually lived there for 3 or 4 years because they're on a fixed income, like disability. And 4 or 5 years ago, their rents were about $400 a month. And now people are paying anywhere between $750 to $950 to live in a building and in apartments that not look fit.
Yeah, you shouldn't be living in
habitation. So, yeah, they're very, very bad.
Please join Catherine and opinion editor Marcia Pledger for a Facebook Live next Tuesday night at 6 p.m. as they discuss the affordable housing issue in Jacksonville. That's the TU Facebook Live next Tuesday, 6 p.m. Before we let you guys go, it's time to go around the horn for our lightning round. And I'll start. Jaguars coach Urban Meyer says he has no interest in returning to college football, trying to squash rumors he might be going to Notre Dame amid his dismal record heading up this NFL team. Ben Becker, what's on your mind?
Well, the opportunity kind of fell in his lap. but, you know, at this stage of the game, I don't think Notre Dame would touch Urban Meyer with a 10-foot pole.
Yeah. Okay, Charles Griggs, go ahead.
Well, in the shadow of the Ahmaud Arbery murder trial, Brunswick, Georgia elects a new mayor, Cosby Johnson. He's a young man, happens to be African-American, and he does have political legislative experience. So I look for some changes in the Brunswick area policy-wise.
And A.G. Gankarski.
Right now on the Florida Channel, the Redistricting Committee for the Florida House is carving up new Florida House districts. Many legislators and many candidates are going to be affected in this region. So you're going to see some people having to make very big political decisions in the coming months. Stay tuned.
Thank you, all of you. And always stay tuned to this show. Ben Becker, Charles Griggs, Catherine Lewin, A.G. Gankarski, have a great weekend. And thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Melissa.
Thanks, everyone. Thank you. And in a moment, Duval singer Miles J gets in the Christmas spirit. That's next. We'll be right back.
And they're just some of the issues we follow every week on Capitol Report. It's your direct connection to what's going on in Tallahassee and what it means to you.
Tonight at 6:30 on WJCT News 89.9.
America is told to keep calm and carry on.
This variant is a cause for concern, not a cause for panic.
The president lays out his new winter plan as the country's first case of Omicron turns up in California. Also, the Supreme Court sends signals in the fate of Roe v. Wade, and another mass shooting devastates families and students in Michigan. Much more on the Friday News Roundup, next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. We want you to join us Sunday night on WJCT News 89.9. It's called After Get Back with the Beatles, a program that picks up the story where Peter Jackson's amazing documentary leaves off. Our station manager, David Luckin, is here to tell us more. Hey, David.
Hey there. And I've been watching the Beatles. I'm halfway through it. It's an amazing documentary. So we are really happy to bring you the rest of the story, After Get Back, an hour special from NPR. And it's really good. It will keep you up to date on where the Beatles went after Get Back.
That's cool. Now, the Jacksonville Music Experience at our own website, jacksmusic.org, has a newsletter and a fresh Spotify playlist every week. People need to get in on that, too.
We certainly do. And Matt Shaw, our arts and entertainment editor, does a great playlist every month called Fresh Squeeze. And I do one for Electro Lounge Radio every Monday. It's a way for you to discover lots of new music and some classic music. And it's all hand-curated by the JME team.
Okay. Again, jacksmusic.org. We want people, too, to sign up for the newsletter and check that out because there is so much local musical talent in this city, and we're covering it all the time.
Yeah, and I love to say from hip-hop and bluegrass to the JSO, we've done stories on Courtney Lewis, the conductor for the JSO. We've done previews of almost every style of music there is, and that's why we are here at jacksmusic.org. We want you to visit us, sign up for the newsletter, and we will keep you well informed of everything that goes on along the First Coast, because that's what we're here for, to enhance your Jacksonville music experience.
Yeah, do that by tuning in Sunday night at 7 on 89.9 for After Get Back with the Beatles. Go to jacksmusic.org, check out our JME, Jacksonville Music Experience, sign up for the newsletter. From classical to hip-hop, we cover it all. You're one stop for the Jacksonville Music Experience. Thanks, David.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Speaking of music, he's a local singer, songwriter, and record producer. Miles J even used to be the lead singer for the Village People. J calls this area home, and he has a Christmas album out. Here's more about the man and his music. Miles J, good to talk to you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
It's good to have you on. You're really a bit of a Renaissance man, not only a classically trained violinist, but an artist, an author, even a famous cook. Let's talk about music, though, because you've got Christmas CD coming out. Tell us about
that. Yes. Well, first of all, obviously, it's time for our holiday celebrations, regardless of what our particular faith may be. And I think it's probably my favorite time of the year, because everyone gets to kind of stand down from the stress of the year and just kind of, like, you know, exhale a bit. Mm-hmm. And I have songs that have been my favorites since my childhood. So I have been itching to record a Christmas CD for a long, long time. I've got one, had it for a few years, and this year we decided to release it. And it starts with an original Christmas song called Christmas Without You.
An original song, that's nice. So what inspires your music?
Oh, my gosh. If I had the answer to that, I would be like right up there with Jeff Bezos. Uh-huh. I am mystified. After a lifetime, probably in the fourth grade when I was introduced to first the recorder and then the violin, I don't know what makes it go. There's speak of muse, it's more than just training, okay? There's talk of gifting and talent and so on, but there's something about music that continues to mystify me. Just when I think, you know, it's run its course, another idea comes 5 a.m. in traffic, during a meal, and you got to respond to the call. So I don't have the answer to what inspires me, but it's something that I think is on a frequency that maybe not everyone else gets.
Hmm. Well, we're really excited to hear the music, and let's talk about the fact that you have worked with some of the biggest names in the business, like Teddy Pendergrass, Branford Marsalis, yes. Grover Washington. How did they inspire you to create this kind of music?
What happens is when you encounter who I consider mentors, and just to be clear, I think that mentors can be alive or have predated this life cycle, okay? So I don't have a reason not to think that Mozart was a mentor, okay, or early Miles Davis, Charlie Parker, these are all mentors. But the guys that I've had a chance to play with give me permission, without exception, every one of them essentially gives me permission to respond to that news that I was telling you about. They say it's real, okay? So respond to it. You've gotten an opportunity to do something special and unique. And even, you know, if all goes well, leave a legacy. So these guys say, no, it's real. You've got that gift. You've got that thing. Go for it.
Now, Miles, are you going to be doing any live performance this holiday?
Not through the holidays. No, I'm going to be quiet until first quarter 22. But I will be practicing.
Awesome. Well, in the meantime, we can take a listen to some of your music. Miles J, it's a pleasure. Have a great holiday. And thank you for being with us.
Same. Be safe, dear.
And here's a little from Miles J's new album, his rendition of Silent Night. Enjoy the music. Have a great weekend, everyone.
Silent Night. Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.